Welcome to the Big Three podcast. This podcast answers three big questions raised from Sunday's sermon by the congregation of Guymere Baptist. The Big Three pod seeks to discuss these questions, explore issues, unpack theology, provide further information and explanation to help your faith grow. You can listen to the original sermon on your favourite podcast platform or at guymerebaptist.org.au. Our prayer is that this pod helps you as you follow Jesus.
Well, welcome to the Big Three for this week. My name is Mark. I'm the senior pastor here at Guymere Baptist Church and your host for the next half hour as we look at three questions that were raised from Sunday's sermon. We are continuing our series in Encounter, the Olive Tree Media resource that looks at the people Jesus encountered in the Gospels and people whom Jesus continues to encounter today. Many of our congregation members are in life groups that are following that through. And so during the week, they're looking at not only the biblical story briefly, but also hearing testimonies from people who have encountered Jesus. And on Sundays, we're picking up the encounter from the Gospels and preaching on that. And Sunday, we were looking at Jesus calming the storm in Luke chapter 8. And how we encounter Jesus in the unexpected. If you watch the video for this week, the encounter resource, you'll know that they kind of skirt along the edges of encountering God in nature a little bit. But this is not about encountering God in nature as much as it is about the completely unexpected calming of the storm and what that meant for the disciples. And so we've got three questions that came out of the sermon on Sunday. I reflected a bit on how the question that the disciples ask after Jesus calms the storm, the who is this, is a question that really is only answered relationally, that we essentially have to figure out not just who Jesus is with some sort of head knowledge, but actually experientially work out what it means for him to be who he appears to be. In this case, how he appears to be God and what that means for following after him. I also talked a little bit about how not only does Jesus do unexpected things, but also that sometimes in the unexpected things, we are forced to consider our relationship with Jesus, kind of hardships, hard times often when those things take place. How do we handle that? And that kind of leads into a couple of the questions. So we've got a question on, shall I say, the text itself, and then two kind of broader questions. The first is this. Jesus was traveling to Gentiles, is Luke 8, 22 to 25. Foreshadowing or preparing for when they reach the other side, including comparing verse 25 and 39, saying Jesus is God. So that's diving right into the text itself. Luke 8, 22 to 25 was the story that we were looking at on Sunday, and it introduces a series of stories that Luke seems to kind of hold together. They all kind of happen one after the other, according to Luke's account. So they cross over to the region of the Gerasenes, which is Gentile territory, meet a demoniac. When Jesus heals him, but casts all the demons into the herd of pigs that kills themselves, the people ask him to leave. And so he goes back and meets Jairus. And while he's going to heal Jairus's daughter, the woman who has a bleed comes up behind him and touches the edge of his robe and is healed. So there's this set of miracles that Luke focuses on that demonstrate Jesus's power and his authority and ultimately his identity. So we'll come back to that. That's a good question to dive into. Secondly, there are unexpected situations where we find Jesus in the calm storm, and Jesus does unexpected things. What are those unexpected things he does? Which is, of course, a little bit tricky because if they're unexpected, it's hard to anticipate them. But I love the heart of the question, which I think is, you know, where should we be kind of looking? What sorts of things should we not discount in terms of what Jesus might be doing in our lives? And then the last one, unexpected suffering can wash our faith overboard or strengthen it. How do we prepare ourselves to face storms and mature? So this, I picked up the Pick up Jesus' response after he calms the storm when he turns to the disciples and says, "Where is your faith?" And one of the commentators of Luke's gospel has suggested that this might be not so much a rebuke of the disciples by Jesus, but a reflection of the parable of the sower, which chapter 8 starts with, in which they have demonstrated hearts like the second soil. They've received the word, they've believed, but as soon as something difficult or hard came along, their faith kind of disappeared, it withered away. And that Jesus is inviting them towards maturity in their faith. And just made the comment near the end of the sermon that for some of us, you know, when we're going through, well, not for some of us, for all of us, when we go through hard times in particular, there's a chance that our faith will mature and there's a chance that our faith withers away. So how do we prepare ourselves, which is the essence of the question, how do we prepare ourselves for those hard times in order that our faith might mature? So a great question for us to grapple with. So looking forward to diving into these. So why don't we get stuck in? So as I said, the first question is really about the text. Jesus was traveling to the Gentiles, is Luke 8, 22 to 25, the calming of the storm, foreshadowing or preparing us for when they reach the other side, including comparing verses 25 and 39 that say Jesus is God. So verses 25 and 39 are related to Jesus casting out a legion of demons. And the references to God are, first of all, the demons saying, you know, basically, we know who you are, the Son of God. What do you want with us? And so they declare Jesus' identity. And then at the end of the story, the healed demoniac asks to come along with Jesus. He wants to follow him. And Jesus says, no, I want you to go and tell people what God has done for you. Now, the second of those could very well, shall we say, be seen as how any prophet of the Old Testament might have spoken, right? That it wasn't them that did the healing, but that God through them. And so you could probably get away with saying that he's referring to the broad healing. But given the fact that Jesus has just calmed a storm, which is something only God can do, and that the demons have identified him as the Son of God, makes it a little bit harder to kind of escape the implications of it. But in terms of the question, is the story foreshadowing or preparing us for when they reach that other side, particularly around the identity of Jesus? I believe that it is. I mean, it's obviously foreshadowing getting to the other side because they have to get to the other side by boat, and so they go by boat. But the collection of stories, as I mentioned, that Luke opens with. So in verse 22, it opens with one day. In other words, there's a sense of separation from the previous story, right? The previous account, and then later, one day after that. So there's something new happening here. And there's this, as I said, collection of fairly incredible miracles. Now, Jesus has already done some miracles in the Gospel of Luke. He's healed a paralyzed man. He's raised the son of a widow in a town named Nain. So he's healed the centurion's servant. Like, it's not as if this is the first time he's done anything like this, but the kinds of miracles, I think, are quite substantial. I think it's also probably foreshadowing not just the questions of identity, right? So calming the storm, casting a legion of demons, you know, when they return, raising someone from the dead, healing someone just by who just touches them with a little bit of faith. All of those things point to the identity of Jesus. So I think that that's an important part of it. The second part, though, that I think it's foreshadowing and preparing us for is the inclusion of the Gentiles. Luke has a fairly broad a purview, right? We believe that it was Luke who was a companion of Paul's and who also wrote the book of Acts. So he's got this kind of wide view of where the gospel ends up. And so there's lots of emphases in Luke's account on those who are outsiders, so to speak, and on the potentials the potential looking forward to the mission to the Gentiles. And so I think there is something in this that Jesus goes to Gentile territory, does something quite remarkable there as well, is rejected there and returns home again. So there's kind of a couple of themes there. I also think that there's something noteworthy in terms of what this passage is foreshadowing in what comes next. So there's the healings that take place in the rest of chapter 8. And then Jesus sends out the 12 in the next section and feeds the 5,000. And then we have what is often seen as a bit of a turning point in the gospel narratives, Peter declaring that Jesus is the Messiah. Still not fully understanding it, but declaring that Jesus is the Messiah. And so I think this is kind of highlighting that a little bit. I did mention this on Sunday, that one of the implications for the disciples, you know, they ask, who is this? Shall we say the obvious answer, or the answer presented by Scripture is that this is God. Therefore, the question to be solved relationally is, what does it mean to follow to follow God, particularly when, in a couple of chapters, that person who identifies themselves with God in terms of the things that they can do, then says, it is necessary for me to die, that I'm going to be handed over to my enemies and that they're going to kill me, and then I'm going to be raised to life. Like, what does it mean for someone with that much power and that much authority and that much sovereignty, who is so closely identified with God that, right, even in the Gospels, it's hard to distinguish between them. What does it mean to follow him? And so I think that part of these stories are meant to increase the tension then around Peter's confession of who Jesus is. That's not to say that this is the, you know, the pivot upon which the whole gospel spins, but I do think there is some certainly some foreshadowing and preparing as the gospel moves on. So a good textual question. It's always helpful to be aware of what's happening in the rest of the gospel around you, around the text that you're looking at, looking both forward and backwards, because the passages, like the calming of the storm, is positioned and has been placed here by Luke. In terms of his overall narrative account, to teach us something, to tell us something about who Jesus is, and to contribute to the narrative account that he has. So great question. I'd really encourage you to be jumping around a little bit, looking both before and after when you're reading a text of Scripture. It can often provide you with some really helpful insights as you seek to unpack the meaning. The second two questions we have are a little bit more, shall I say, theological and big picture. So the first is, or the second, the first of the two questions, but the second question, there are unexpected situations where we find Jesus, like in the calmed storm, and Jesus does unexpected things. What are those unexpected things he does? So the story of the storm being calmed is an example of something unexpected that forces the reassessment and reconsideration of who Jesus is. And it's true that Jesus did it as well, right? And so there's a sense that there's this miraculous component to it. And then there are things that happen. You know, I talked a bit about storms as a metaphor for those hardships, the sufferings, you know, the everything from the lost job to the death of a loved one to a really bad health prognosis, any number of things that ends up leaving us questioning what it is that we believe. And I think both of those things, both of those circumstances are ways in which we can encounter Jesus. The one, shall we say, as we turn to him, and the other in terms of we're forced to ask the same question the disciples were, who is this? And so the question, I think, is getting at that whole, you know, what are the sorts of unexpected things that Jesus does? And again, as I said, you know, we obviously can't tell because they're unexpected. But I believe the heart of the question is about what are the kinds of things, the sorts of things that Jesus does or might do? What are the things that we should not discount in terms of our lives? And I guess there's a handful of categories that I would kind of think about in terms of the things that Jesus does that are unexpected. I think the first category is the miraculous. Sometimes we experience those miraculous moments. There is a healing where none was expected, or a good outcome kind of jumps out at us where no good outcomes seem to be possible. There's a remarkable breakthrough in a situation or whatever it might be. And so I think whenever we encounter those miraculous supernatural things, I reckon that that's an opportunity for us to consider where Jesus might be in that. And I think that one of the things that makes this a little bit more complicated for us is that sometimes, like, it's shall we say, it's clearly miraculous to us, but it may not be to others. Health outcomes, something that's truly miraculous. I haven't heard a lot of stories about people coming to faith when someone's experienced a healing miracle. I think it probably gets discounted as, positive thinking, or just that small percentage of people who do recover, or whatever the case might be. But I think we need to be aware that sometimes there's a close experience of Jesus that we encounter in what might appear to be not so much miraculous as just kind of a really curious set of coincidences. And I think that's one of the ways that that Jesus works in unexpected ways. So the two examples, if you're going to be participating in one of the life groups, that the encounter video has this week, includes two people who had an unexpected answer to prayer. In the one case, a woman, she fell pregnant, was desperate for a healthy child, for a child, and prayed, and she gave birth to a daughter, healthy and well. And for her, that was that answer, right, was evidence that something had happened, right? That something had happened there. Now, you might just say, well, she was already pregnant and she was young. And was there any reason why she would have expected to have a child who wasn't healthy or who wouldn't make full term or whatever the case might be? And so it doesn't look to some on the outside as if it was that miraculous, but her experience of it in terms of the kind of prayer that she prayed and the answer that she feels that she received, she saw as evidence of Jesus. The other fellow, he said he prayed, prayed basically a prayer of, show me who you are. Like, if you're real, show me. And he said he didn't connect it right away, but he started bumping into all sorts of people that he'd known for a long time and realized that they were Christians. So all these Christians kind of came out of the woodwork. Now, again, is that miraculous? Maybe. They were Christians already. Maybe he just hadn't been paying attention. Maybe they hadn't said anything. Like, is that really the miraculous? But from his perspective, that was part of the answer to that prayer. And so there are some unexpected things that happen where the thing, the event, the circumstance kind of shocks us. And there are some things that are unexpected for the simple reason that while they're not particularly strange, their timing is unexpected. And I think those are areas, the miraculous and those kind of coincidental timings, I think can be really quite significant for us. And I think the third thing that I would say in terms of the areas where Jesus might do something unexpected, Carl, when he opened the series a few weeks ago, talked about the fact that we can often be quite skeptical and cynical about miraculous stories, people talking about dreams or visions or, answers to prayer, whatever the case might be. But I do think that there's something about those more mystical experiences that we should be very careful not to discount. Dreams and visions. Again, one of the stories, there was almost a I'm not sure it was a premonition, but he was about to engage in something in his local Wiccan community and just felt overwhelmingly sick and just didn't think he should participate. Like, he kind of made that connection. And so I think that there's a number of those sorts of things that we ought to be paying attention to. And again, you know, Jesus will do what Jesus will do because Jesus is who Jesus is, right? He's God. He can do what he likes. But in terms of the sorts of things that you might anticipate, the sorts of areas where he might indeed encounter or do something unexpected, the miraculous, like the overtly miraculous, I think coincidences, and then the mystical are three areas that I think are well worth keeping in mind, I suppose, as we look for an encounter with Jesus. And that's, you know, shall I say, not to discount things like continuing to pray and seeing answers to prayer, whatever those prayers might be, or encountering Jesus in the Word. That's still a pretty good place to start, right? To actually read his words and to read about his actions and to reflect with the gospel writers on the kind of person that Jesus is, right? Not just to rely upon or wait for the mystical experience or the miraculous or just to account for coincidences in our lives, but to consider some of those other ways as well. So, and I think, you know, reading through the Gospels can be unexpected as well in terms of what strikes us and what the Holy Spirit reveals to us. So I think those are some of the ways that would be worth, some of the areas I think would be worth looking for Jesus to do something unexpected. Probably, just as I, you know, as I say that, there's probably one other, and that is what Jesus does in someone else's life. You know, to some degree, the stories that are part of the Encounter series are exactly that. They're stories of Jesus doing something unexpected in someone's life, and we get to kind of listen to that and go, okay, given their story, who they were before, who they become now, the change that's come about them, come about in their lives, can we really discount that? Can we really truly discount that? Can we look at someone whose life has been changed so radically and say, you know, it's just a figment of their imagination. So I think that's another area where Jesus might do something unexpected in someone else's life close to us that then challenges us to answer the question that the disciples do. Who is this? Who is this? And what does it mean for us to follow after him? Final question today is, unexpected suffering can wash our faith overboard or strengthen it. How do we prepare ourselves to face storms and mature? So I mentioned that a commentator in Luke's gospel suggests that Jesus' question to the disciples, where is your faith, is not, you know, like a really stern rebuke to them, but is actually a reflection of a little bit of the parable of the soils, right? The four soils, the hard path that it represents the hard heart, the shallow soil, which receives the word with joy and then withers away under hardship. The third soil, which is amongst the weeds, which is it grows but never matures because it's choked up by the concerns of the world, and then the good soil. And I commented on the fact that the disciples find themselves, shall we say, as an example of that second soil. They face some hardship, and whatever faith they had in Jesus evaporated, or as I suggested, you know, using the metaphor of the storm, got washed overboard. And I think in many cases, you know, when we think about circumstances and situations that have made us stronger, they're inevitably hard times, right? Hard times make us stronger, but they can also totally derail us, right? And when it comes to matters of faith, you know, whenever something really difficult happens, whatever that might be, one of the questions we do ask, and we should ask, is like, where's God in this? Where is God in this? How could he allow this to happen? Why did he allow this to happen? What am I supposed to do now? Like all of those sorts of questions. And our faith can end up on a bit of a knife's edge, right? Either falling away or being strengthened. And so the question's are really, I think it's a really helpful one. How do we prepare ourselves to face storms and mature? Because by the time you get to the storm, shall we say I wouldn't say it's too late. You know, I think you can always come out of a storm in life with a firmer, stronger faith. And there's a lot of things that, And some of the things that I'm going to suggest that we do don't really truly prepare us for those sorts of hardships, right? It's a little bit like, I don't know, for those of you who are parents, you know, are you ever really truly ready to have children? Right? Like, you know, there's a sense, you know, you can answer the question physically. Yes, at a certain point I'm physically able to have children, but am I really emotionally, financially, like, am I ready for children? And I'm not sure that there's an answer to that. And nothing that you can do really truly prepares you for having children, right? You can read all the books, you can talk to all the people, but until you have a child and bring them home and become a parent, you can't really prepare for it. And that's a little bit like, I think, hardship and difficulties. I'm not sure that there's any program that we can engage in that will guarantee that when we go through a hard time, our faith will soar and become stronger. But there are, I think, a few things that we can be, that we can do to prepare ourselves a bit with that. So one of them is to do a little bit of theological work, to actually, to build and to have a theology of suffering. Right, a theology that actually has done a little bit of thinking, a little bit of praying, a little bit of research about what we truly believe about suffering, and God's role in it, and our response to it, and the best ways that we can navigate it. And again, thinking about suffering and kind of trying to come up with a good response is a little bit like reading the books on parenting before you have a kid. But there is something, because I think sometimes people haven't really thought too much about suffering until they start to suffer. Like, they haven't thought too much about how they would respond in the face of an unexpected tragedy until the unexpected tragedy comes upon them. And again, while thinking about it is not really going to fully bridge that gap, it at least allows us to have done some thinking when we're not under pressure, right? It's like the value of, you know, training and preparing for things and doing theoretical studies so that when you actually get into the field, you're more likely to be able to handle the circumstances and situations that you face. You still have to do them for the first time and all that sort of stuff. Just last week we did CPR training. Staff and volunteers, and, you know, CPR training, if you've done that before, it's theoretical. You're working on a dummy. It's all fairly controlled. You're just kind of going through, you know, the right steps in the right order. Hugely different to actually having to perform CPR on a real person, right? But you hope that the theory helps in the field. And I think this is one of those examples. Trying to figure out what is it that we believe about suffering can help prepare us for when we face it. Generally speaking, you know, my life's been pretty smooth. You know, it hasn't always been easy, but I would not say that I've gone through overwhelming hardships. But I hope that some of the thinking that I've done, some of the theological reflection that I've done on suffering would serve me well in those circumstances. You know, thinking around, you know, God's goodness, and some of the most faithful responses in Scripture to hardship and suffering of basically saying, I'd rather suffer with God than have a good life without Him. That God is always worth loving and following and obeying, regardless of how poorly it goes for me or how well it goes for other people. Now, that's not an easy position to hold. It's not even an easy position to hold theoretically, but I would like to think that some of that reflection might possibly have a benefit later on. In the context of Luke's gospel, I think that it's interesting to note, you know, Jesus talks about the four soils. And one of the, I think, part of the good news of the gospel accounts is that the state of one's heart is not set once, never to change. So the hard heart does not have to remain the hard heart. And the shallow soil does not have to remain this shallow soil. And the, you know, the weed infested soil does not need to remain weed infested. We can move back and forth along that continuum. And so there is an invitation, I think, again, in Jesus' statement, you know, where is your faith, to reflect on and consider the state of our hearts. And so there may be some things that we need to be doing to strengthen our relationship with God, right? To do the soil work in our hearts, right? To making sure, to the best of our ability, that we're not allowing our faith to be choked out by the concerns of the world, or making sure that, you know, like the rocks of, I don't know, of doubt or skepticism or whatever it is, are not keeping our faith from shriveling when things get hard, but trying to deeply root ourselves in scripture and in prayer, and in our relationship with the Lord. When you go through hard times with close friends, you know, there's a sense that, you know, the deeper the relationship, I mean, I think the more complicated it can be, but there's also something to fall back on. There's a relational framework to fall back on. And I think that that's true in our relationship with God as well. So I think doing some of that theological reflection before is helpful. I think that, you know, just going about the work of following Jesus and trying to keep a close eye on our heart, you know, and making sure that the soil is as good as it can be in terms of our obedience and our faithfulness and our commitment to. I think those are things that we can do. And I suppose a third would be to really foster to foster spiritual friendships. To have people who can walk alongside you in the midst of a hard time, right? People who will stick with you during that hard time. People who will support you and who have the same, shall we say, goals in mind of not just kind of getting through the hard time, but also that your faith might mature. And again, I think that's something that we can kind of do pre-suffering, right? That we can actually seek to develop some of those spiritual friendships, you know, with people who are concerned not just for who we are, but for our faith. And for the maturity of our faith, and maybe having some of those theological discussions with them, reflecting somewhat with them, so that when we go through hard times, we have a framework to kind of interpret it. We have some people who can stand with us who have the same outcomes and desires in mind, and alongside of that, doing the work of just trying to be as faithful as we can so that, you know, we have deep roots when the winds and the storms of life do hit us. So I hope that those are helpful answers to those questions. Thank you for submitting those. Looking forward to this week as we continue the Encounter series. Margie Robertson, our Serve Team Coordinator and Ops Manager, is going to be preaching, and looking forward to hearing what she has to share with us as we continue to consider the encounters with Jesus, both in the Gospels and in our present day lives. So I hope you can join us on Sunday and again next week for the Big Three. Until then, God bless.
Thanks for joining us at the GBC Big Three podcast. We trust you found this inspiring, encouraging, challenging, but ultimately helpful to enable you to follow Jesus. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can also listen to the We Are the Church podcast, a discussion pod with real stories from real people at Guymere Baptist as they share their experiences of faith and discipleship in action. If you've enjoyed this pod, why don't you rate and review it? This way others can discover the podcast too.